So, wow, there's not much to say after that, Chris. So I come to the conversation of school reform as a high school principal in New York City. I run the largest transfer high school, which is an alternative school, means that my students have been in other high schools and have not experienced success. They're between the ages of 17 and 21, and they, I was calculating it today, this year at this moment, I have somewhere between 85 and 90% of my students who are entitled to free or reduced lunch. They have missed a tremendous amount of education for a variety of reasons. Some kids have been incarcerated. Some kids are parents. We have a daycare center in the school, school-based health clinic. We try to provide just about everything that we can, including sound education. So New York City had the privilege of being at the forefront of the school reform movement in the United States. We had Mayor Bloomberg, who was also a big funder of school reform, and his favorite chancellor, Chancellor Klein, Joel Klein, who also now works for Rupert Murdoch and Amplify, selling some really great instructional tools and data collection tools for us all. So high stakes accountability is something that I'm very familiar with and I used to worry a lot about. We had No Child Left Behind and we had very strict performance targets. And as you can imagine, kids who are not really interested in school don't do well on tests. So my test, my data, when you look at it, the attendance, test scores, it's in the toilet. And it has been, I'm very honest about that. Somebody told me a very long time ago, that's your data, own it. Don't apologize for it, that's what it is. So it's bad. But my teachers work very hard, I work very hard. Our students work extremely hard and have been up against some educational failure that I would have turned away from if I were them. So we had No Child Left Behind sanctions that we had to face. We had something called school report cards. That was also another way that we could punish schools in New York City. And the school report card really looked at the same data that was collected for No Child Left Behind, but it just kind of ratcheted it up a level by comparing you to peer schools. So luckily for me, we do well compared to our peer schools. So my school was able to every year kind of squeak by and not get threatened with closure. But what I did get to see was what happens to schools when they're closed. When students who really love their teachers and the teachers who love their students and who are trying very hard under some extremely difficult circumstances are told, you may no longer go to this school, you have to leave and go someplace else. I've sat at hearings and watched the children beg for their schools, and the begging and the tears and the videos and the pleading just falls on deaf ears. So that to me is what they call structural violence, where we have created a system that punishes the people who suffer the most. And it's a really horrific thing to have to watch. So I struggle, the last thing I want is for my school to close. It's been open as an alternative high school now for 42 years. And we like to refer to it as a port in the storm. It's a place where kids can come and get some refuge in a city that's not always kind to them, where they can get an education and hopefully get to go to college. So I had to make a choice as a principal. Do I do what I know pedagogically or instructionally is the right thing to do, the really great teaching, or do we do that kind of data analysis, item analysis of the tests that we're being held accountable to, and do we teach to the test? So I'm going to own it and say it publicly. I chose to teach to the test, and actually that's why my school is probably still open to this day, because we do teach to the test. We analyze the test scores, we focus in on what the discrete skill deficits are. We make sure that the kids can pass the test the next time it's given, and I'll tell you, my teachers can teach to a test better than probably most teachers on the planet. Because our survival depends on it. and we need to do it for the kids, and we need to keep the school open. But in the big picture, what I was hearing was my students were coming home from college after their first year and saying, you know, Jean, it didn't really work out. Yeah, I'm coming home. And so I knew that what we were doing was not right. And I really was starting to lose sleep about it. So I thought, I have to start speaking up, and I have to start speaking out. So I learned from a group of folks. We went to Washington, D.C. one spring to go sit outside of Arne Duncan's office and tell him what we thought about school reform. And they said, the folks I was with, you know, if they don't have the testing data, this whole system that they have of accountability falls apart. So I thought, oh. So if I don't have my kids tested, then they can't use the data to hurt children ultimately and close their schools. So the first year I opted out, I wasn't really concerned about my own children at that point because I thought, you know, we live in this nice tree-lined streets of Ridgewood and we pay a lot of taxes and our school system's really good. And I thought, oh, this isn't gonna get to Ridgewood, but I need to speak out for my students. So I opted my kids out. And then I was noticing that the conversation in Ridgewood was changing. And we're talking about the Common Core, and then we're talking about the New Jersey Ask, but then the park, and I'm paying more attention now to who's publishing the homework that's coming home, what is looking like test prep, and I'm noticing that we're doing a lot of teaching to the test in Ridgewood too. And I know that test scores in Ridgewood, if they drop, our property values drop too. So there's some stakes that I thought maybe didn't exist here that do exist here. So I thought, all right, so as Junius teaches us, if you just do it by yourself, nobody's paying you any attention. So what you have to do is get people organized and come as a group and do it together. So I've worked with folks across the state of New Jersey to organize parents to deny the state our testing data. Because if they can't count it, they can't use it against us. So that's one piece. The other piece that I've learned during these years is that there's plenty of data to be collected that can tell a different narrative. So at my own school, I have what we call an alternative data system, and we've taught other alternative high schools to do the same thing, where we collect the same data that the Department of Education collects about our schools, but we analyze it differently, and we can tell a very different story. They can tell us a failure story with weighting kids. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors that they use when they do these school report cards. But if we just look at straight up how many kids passed, how many kids failed, who's graduating, who's not, who's moving forward, we can tell some really great stories of success. So what I have to say to us all is that we really do have more power. Sometimes it feels like, how can we fight this big system? What can we do? We have a lot of power, but we have to realize that we have it, and we have to work together. And we especially have to amplify each other's voices. So one last thing, I had to work for Cami Anderson, was my direct supervisor. And I'm usually like a peaceful, loving kind of person, but I have such anger toward that woman for what she did to the alternative high schools in New York City. She really destroyed our superintendency. We're just now beginning to build it back. We have, for the first time since she left to go to Newark, we have a superintendent this year, and I'm very hopeful that with the new mayor, de Blasio, that we'll be able to build something really positive back. But my heart goes out to the folks in Newark, because I know from experience what she's doing to them. It's wrong. We need to pay attention. We need to document. We need to tell the story, because she shouldn't be sleeping at night. So, thanks.